Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
The global price of wheat has climbed in recent days following Russia's withdrawal from an international agreement to allow grain exports from war-torn Ukraine. The Black Sea deal was negotiated in July of last year and permitted Ukraine to export grain to world markets through its southern ports. Ukrainian grain stores and shipping infrastructure along the Black Sea have now been subject to Russian airstrikes in the days since the deal collapsed. Dr. Peter Alexander is a lecturer in global food security at the University of Edinburgh. He joins me now on the line. Peter, can you tell us, please, first, pre-war, how important a food producer was Ukraine to the world?
Yeah, both Ukraine and Russia were important. So they were providing, in the case of Ukraine, something like 45 million tons of wheat to the global market. And that, you know, that's pretty substantial. That's something like 9% of internationally traded wheat came from Ukraine. For a period that was halted before the signing of that deal, as you say, in July last year.
You made the point when we were talking to you about this before that we in Western Europe were going to be able to essentially buy our way out of any shortage problem. Not so everywhere else. What has the impact of disruptions to Ukraine's capacity actually meant around the world?
Well, the impact, as I think you're alluding to, is largely through price rather than kind of availability. So there are global stocks of staples such as wheat and maize. So there is the availability there, at least for a kind of couple of years in terms of loss of exports from Ukraine. But, you know, what we saw was during last year, the very steep rises in commodity prices, both of course, as we know, energy prices, but also food prices. And that has really damaging effects on the poorest in society, you know, both within the UK and Ireland, but also globally, you know, people in sub-Saharan Africa and places where people tend to have lower incomes and are spending more of those incomes on food. A good example would be, you know, we're seeing at the moment, you know, there's disruption and kind of conflict and riots, if you like, in Kenya, in Nairobi, that are largely based on cost of living crisis, if you want, and the inability to afford food.
There have been some 60,000 tons of grain that have been burned now since the Russians turned their back on this deal. What impact do you see this having?
I mean, 60,000 tons sounds a lot, but actually, you know, in terms of kind of the global markets that, or even just the exports from Ukraine, that's really not a huge amount. You know, we're talking about tens of millions of tons. So, you know, under the Black Sea grain deal, there was some 33 million tons that were exported. So 60,000 tons sounds a lot, but really it's more the kind of confidence that seeing these warehouses going up in flames and the kind of the if you like the posturing and the message that sends about Russia's willingness to re-engage in that deal, that I think is the consequence rather than that specifically those thing, you know, that quantity of grain being lost.
That quantity, that 33 million tons in the last 12 months that you mentioned, what would that have been in more normal times?
So the projection, the FAO projection, was for it to be some pre-war, was for the exports to be something like 45 million tons. So, you know, the quantity that was exported under the grain deal was probably lower than it would have been, you know, if the war hadn't been occurring. But obviously, you know, we're talking two-thirds, something of that nature, of what would have been expected to be exported.
Are there overland routes out of Ukraine for this produce, or does that just add too much to the cost?
Yeah, there are overland routes, but they're much more limited. There are some sort of logistical problems in terms of the differences in gauge of the railways, and also kind of countries that on sort of EU eastern countries are really concerned about kind of cheap grain from Ukraine kind of flooding their markets. And so there's an agreement with the EU for that Ukrainian grain not to be sold in those countries, but to sort of be transported through them. But it's not really going to be a viable replacement for the quantities of grains that are being talked about here, certainly in the sort of the short to medium term.
So if this situation does maintain, if Russia not just threatens but actually starts hitting merchant vessels in the Black Sea, what kind of impact do you see this having?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to tell. I mean, obviously last year we saw that prices increased very steeply up until the point of signing of this grain deal, when they started decreasing. But there's a whole bunch of other things that are happening at the same time, in terms of what happened last year. So energy prices were coming down, so fertilizer prices were coming down, and that was all kind of calming the market in food commodities, because obviously the fertilizer, if fertilizers tripled at one stage, which was leading to potentially lower uses of fertilizer and therefore lower yields being achieved, and that kind of having a much wider consequence than the loss of the exports from Ukraine. But what will happen now, where we've kind of had the energy markets largely become a lot more stable and a lot more kind of prices returning to something like normality, and the same for fertilizer, then it's hard to know whether this disruption will have quite the same magnitude of effect. However, even if the effect is sort of somewhat more muted, somewhat smaller than we saw last year, that still has big consequences for those, as I mentioned before, on the lowest incomes, which are already struggling with cost of living in general.
Which do you think is the more likely scenario here, that the Russians are now using this as a weapon of war, or that they're looking for a quid pro quo somewhere else, like a concession on the exports of fertilizers?
Yeah, they're definitely keen to have to make their export of food and fertilizers easier, as it were. So the current sanctions, EU and US sanctions, don't include food and fertilizers from Russia explicitly. But the Russians have made the point that they're still somewhat curtailed because the SWIFT payment system stopping payments or making it more difficult for payments to be made for those commodities. So they want the Russian Agricultural Bank to be kind of added back to the SWIFT payment system. That's one of the things that they seem they seem to be sort of posturing for in those.
In which case, then, the question becomes, are we prepared to give Russia the foreign exchange that it wants to indirectly continue funding its war effort, or do we impose these very stiff price increases on the developing world, and the Horn of Africa in particular?
Well, that is the question. I'm not sure it's a question that I feel in any way capable of answering.
I was throwing it out there rhetorically. I wasn't expecting you to solve that particular conundrum.
I completely agree that that is the question. And how much do we as the global society want to be, forced, blackmailed, I suppose could be the right word, into giving these concessions? And yeah, it's a really tough, it's a really tough dilemma.
It will be a while before we start to see. It will be a while before we start to see these price increases, though, won't it? Because what happens on the commodity markets takes a while to reach the supermarket shelves.
Well, that's certainly true, and obviously we don't buy tons of wheat in supermarkets. So there are many other costs in the bread, for example, that we're buying in the supermarket. But there's been headlines about prices of going up 10% in the last week, which is correct. But prices are still of global commodity prices for wheat, for example, are still below what they were even 3 or 4 months ago. So they're similar to the level of March this year, and actually quite similar to the level sort of at the beginning-ish of 2021, and quite substantially down over the highs of July 2022. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's it's too early to panic, I suppose, would be the
one of the
I'm trying to
One of the agricultural policy changes that was suggested when this initially reared its head at the outset of the war was that we would convert more land to tillage in this country. We have failed miserably in doing that. Has anybody actually managed to rise to that challenge? Have we seen a diversification that would reduce our dependence on Ukrainian and Russian exports?
I think it's too early to say. I mean, the sort of global data for this, which is published by the FAO, would have that data, but it has a long lead time in its publication, and it's really anecdotal. And I think, you know, we would expect to see, you know, with higher fertilizer prices, a sort of shift from to sort of expand agricultural area and reduce a sort of intensity of that agricultural area, and you know, higher food prices causing that land expansion you're talking about. But I haven't seen convincing data to suggest that, or convincing data to refute it either. But I just don't think the data's there to make a claim one way or the other.
Dr. Peter Alexander, Senior Lecturer in Global Food Security in the University of Edinburgh, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Sunday's hurling final after these.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.